Been listening for the last hour to Indie Media. On the way down the stairs, Penny just apologised to me for calling Saturday's Stop the War demonstration trot crap. But of course, we expect nothing else from the liberal moralists of ceaseless action, the hatred of mass action being a sure sign of the absence of individual thinking, and urban regeneration funded by the British Council. Never mind, at least it reminded me to mention the demonstration. Here's my theme tune. Hello, this is Ben Watson with Late Lunch Without to Lunch, the magazine programme of opinions and music which doesn't suit the product push of most magazines. Now here's a question which I'm sure is taxing the overactive brain cells of magazine editors up and down the land even as I speak, namely, what is living and what is dead in the work of Theodor Adorno? The great German music critic and philosopher who died in 1969 has been variously described as the most original thinker of the 20th century and, with an interesting overemphasis on words beginning with the letter M, as a crotchety mandarin who wrote incomprehensible Marxist philosophy bordering on mysticism. The great danger here is the neatness of identifications, with bright sparks popping up who think that because they've mastered a few topics in Kant, they can get to grips with a thinker who grappled seriously with the great and tragic events of 20th century history. Adorno was 14 when the Bolsheviks pulled off a working-class revolution in Russia, and he lived to see the rise of Nazism in Germany, the victory of the Allies in the Second World War, the reconstitution of capitalism in post-war Europe, and finally the era of the Cold War, when fear of global destruction by nuclear weapons was used to stifle criticism and free thinking. All this historical experience finds a place in Adorno's thought, so anyone seeking to return it to traditional philosophical categories, ones which fail to recognise the destruction of reason evinced by modern states devoted to genocide and atom bombs, must inevitably betray its major motivational forces. In fact, I'd argue that academic philosophy can't understand Adorno, but modern art can. Adorno maintained that society hasn't yet caught up with Finnegan's Wake. So there's more real Adorno to be found in reading one page of James Joyce's neglected masterpiece, a parody Bible for a post-ideological everyday life, than in trusting in philosophical concepts made up by the bourgeoisie in its progressive phase, i.e. a long time ago. And still and all at that time of the dynast days of old conning Sotterick Sulkinboard and Bargo-Muster Bart, when they struck coil and shock haunts in old Hungerford on Mudway, where first I met the old Piotrick flyed from May, and the Finn and Haddies and the Noel Sharks and the Muxtails Turtles like an acoustic potish, and the Gree Super Bullyum, and how he polled him up his hocket of Votta and got big buzz for his name and the Airweek's honours from home, colonies and empire. They were always with assisting grace, thinking up and not forgetting about Shims and Shawls Week, in Auld Lang Syne up their four hosen bands that were four up beautiful sister misters, now happily married, unto old gallstone belly, and there they were always counting and contradicting every night tis early the lovely mother of periwinkle buttons according to the lapper part of their anachronism up one up two up one up four, and after that there now she was in the end the dearie sold powder and all the beautiful sisters, and that was her mudhen republican name right enough from alum and oves, and they used to be getting up from under in their tape and straw garlands with all the worries awake in their hair at the kookaburra bell ring ring all wrong inside of them come in come on you lazy loafs all inside their poor old Sheldon bell box come out to hell you lousy louts so frightened for the duth clang of war like knock knees bumps by the fist of toes by the fup Like knock knees bumps by the fist of man straights, yes, yes, at all hours every night on their mistletoes, the four old Ulsters, to see was the Transton postscript come, with their o'er cushions under their arm saxters, all puddled and mythified, the way the wind wheeled the shule around when nobody wouldn't even let them rust, and from playing their gas spiels, crossing their sleep by the shocking silence, when they were in dreams of yore, standing behind the door, or leaning out of the chair, or kneeling under the sofa cover, and setting on the soup tureen, getting unto their way something barbarous, changing the one wet underdown convibrational bed all they used to slumber under when hope was there no more, and putting on their half a hat and falling over all synopticals in a panegyric and repeating themselves like svolving, like the time they were dadging the talky cook that chased them, look all around the stool, walk everywhere for a jewel to break fire to all the rancers, to collect all and bits of brown, the rathure's evolvement in spirits of time in all fathom of space, and slooping around in a bourneen and bath slippers, and go away to old Patrick and see a Dr. Walker. And after that, so glad they had their night tentacles, and there they used to be, flapping and cycling, and a-doing a dune loop, panamentically around the waists of the ships in the wake of their good old fern again, as tired as they were, at their wind's widths in the wave's length, the clipper built and the 5-4 masters and lally of the cleft-off bagoderts and row of the fair cheats, exchanging fleas from host to host with arthropo-sophia, and he selling him before he forgot, issel-issel, after having prealablably deflegmatized his gutterful of throaty frogs with a lungeable fong in his suck-mouth ear, while the deer invoked to the coulandere by a pulper-brows lift left no doubt in his minder, till he was instant and he was trusting, sister soul in brother hand, the subjects before their passion grand, that one fresh from the crow about Aethny-Maethny married and mailed, and that one too from Egrevacon saga, a booth a goose a gave a goth in the egg, and the parkside pranks of quality queens, cat after kin, for Earl Hooveson's choosing, and the Hoover and Harmon, or how when, thee upon thus ch-ch-ch, I sold to binoculuses, memo stinmus ego tomb subconsciously senses upers the deep profundity of multi mathematical immaterialis, where bejubers in the pan cosmic urge the al imminence of that which itself is itself alone. Hear, O hear, caller Erin. Extoria rises on this our here now plain in disunited solod, likewood and gusheous bodies with science say, pedal whitened passion panting, pugno-plangent intuitions of reunited selfdom. Murky way, abstruer dim. In the higher dimissional, selfless all-self, theming nasty me-thing idleless, telling jolly McGolly, dear Mr. John, the belated dishevelled, hacking away at a parchment pied, and all the other analysts, the steamships and the ladies foursome, oven four, nedden four, dinkety duke, down a lapping, how long tandem, like a four retired schoonmasters, and their pair of green eyes and peering in, so they say, like the narcoleps in the lakes of Coma, though the steamy windows, into the honeymoon cabins on board the big steamer dories made by Fumadori, and the saloon ladies madorn toilet chambers lined over prawn silk, and rub off the salty catera off her windows, and hee-hee listening qua committee, the poor old Quakers open the dure to see all the Hunnish mooners and the first-class ladies, serious me, alas, spring as you fancy, and sheets far from the lad, courting in blankets, end familiars, and she, all improper, in lovely morning toilet for the rose crumpler, the thrill driver, the sigh inspirer, with that olive throb in his nude neck, and Swain and Thane, thanks ever so much for the tiny quote, which sort of made every thingling again so very much more delight a fillet, and the perfectly sweet of her, bootifully yours, under all your familiarities, by preventing Grace forgetting to say their grace before Chamber Dory, before going to boat with the verges of the chapter of the opening of the month of Namer Knantut. So pass the pogue for Grace's sake, amen, and all he, quaking so fright, and she shaking, aching, aye. That was James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, a better guide to the internal logic of Theodore Adorno than anything he wrote, at least if what he wrote is approached from Kantian idealist faith in representation. Earlier, I asked the question, what is living and what is dead in the work of Theodore Adorno? My answer is that nothing could be deader than the inert paradoxes of his Aesthetic Theory, the book he was working on when he died in 1969, invariably the text of choice for Kantian interpretation of the tragedies of modern life. One wag, named Tom, recently summarised aesthetic theory using the Church of England's funeral oration, "In the midst of life, we are in death." Nothing could be deader than the black canvas, bleak stage, existential, Beckettian moment in the arts which Adorno preached after World War II, an aesthetic Marshall Plan to salvage highbrow culture in a decimated Europe. Nothing could be deader than the pseudo-Marxist political pessimism, which is so deep-dyed and true and wise, it could only push unhappy consciousness aside and return to the well-laid dinner table. Adorno must be applied to celebrity golf and Pokemon pocket monsters, or to nothing at all. That said, the ritual rubbishing of Adorno and Horkheimer's thesis on mass culture as mass deception, staged each year in cultural studies departments, is also futile. Even the pop star Will Young, the now forgotten winner of a televised music poll to find the next chart-topping celebrity, admitted in a Time Out interview that Adorno is probably correct. The cultural studies assault on Adorno is stymied by the paradox that in the realm of academic analysis, celebration of mass culture remains as elitist as the most bitter critique. It was a perfect illustration of the failed dialectic of the magazine Living Marxism that a few years ago its University of Ideas formulated its cultural debate around the mass-elite couplet, a metaphysical opposition as hostile to real thought and practical action as good versus evil or time versus space. The orthodox cult stud's position on Adorno, a sterile amalgam of Britpop consciousness and Parisian postmodernism, is so blatantly stupid, it does tempt one to vaunt even Adorno's paralysed size, just to see the Dumbo dimbrain sputter. However, academic Adornoism, drawn towards the self-imploding abstractions of Adorno's thought, rather than his crucial remarks on moon rocks, science fiction, blind filming or Tchaikovsky, results in the murmur of repetition known as prayer. However unbelieving and negative, these buggers turn him into Wittgenstein, for goodness sake. Despite the proclaimed inversion, a theological pall hangs over these proceedings. This is because what is living in Adorno is not the purveyor of finished truths, of proud maxims sabotaged by self-criticism, but the music listener, who opened a conduit between our involuntary, bodily response to music and thought about society and the universe. Adorno psychoanalyzed music, driven by an investigative materialism as open-ended, curious and unfazed by freakishness as Freud's. Adornoites who forget to check Adorno's theory against their own musical experience are rather like Freudians and Lacanians who never talk to the mad, morticians of dogma, curators of a dead language, blind signposts in a dismal territory. For Adorno, aesthetic response is not a whim, a choice made by a sovereign subject exercising a right to social distinction, but a recognition of necessities which are social, historical, and finally, cosmic. Aesthetic correctitude is hence not the end point of philosophical reasoning, but a start. Actually existing artworks can be the building blocks of social theory which isn't founded on wishes, ethics, or morals, but on unimpeachable sensual data whose authority goes right down to the instinctual substratum of the individual, though without abrogating the mediations of intelligence and organised knowledge. A bridge between music and philosophy, Adorno's argument is both amazingly weak and amazingly powerful. Skeptics can dismiss the whole thing as a skyscraper built on the shifting sands of personal taste. Others find their subjectivity confirmed in a manner which is highly charged. Finnegan's Wake proves Adorno's point. So do guitarist Stefan Yavortsin and drummer Paul Hessian, caught here performing a duet at the Clinker in Nunhead in Peckham Rye, South London.
Thank you.
That was Stefan Yevortsin on guitar and Paul Hessian on drums during an all-too-rare visit of the Leeds-based Hessian to London last month. And that was a recording from the South London Clinker in Nunhead. Now, just bear with me as I'm changing discs. I haven't yet mastered the mini-disc player for smooth professional purposes. And I'm queuing up my next track. I've got a poem to read first, but I don't want to be distracted while I'm doing that. Okay. Resonance 104.4 Radio recently lost its station manager and main man, Knut Alfermann. I hope that Resonance FM will fare better than did Simon Optik after the demise of its boss Anton in the forthcoming episodes of the German dynastic TV series Heimat. Just to make sure Knut doesn't regret moving on from Resonance too much, here's a poem for him. This is the kind of nonsense his efforts put on the airwaves. The poem was written to be recited at the 12 Bar Club, so it hinges on one of the words we're not allowed to say on air and causes all sorts of problems for broadcasters committed to spontaneous colloquial expression. In a time-honoured cabalistic operation, in this rendition, the evil word has been reversed. Ode to Knut Alfermann. Knut Alfermann, man alf cut connection rewire back feed, input output eyelet, transnational epic noise pattern, interplay random acoustic experiment, endless poker rucksack bicycle hindraft reformulation, worm turning gear shaft. In principle of mustard ethic, ear nerd, rustic protrusion, technology under duress, a willful improv strict attention, freedom as a why not scape with piles of live appliances, process as objective, hip iconism as gnosis. Gone blast, panic, gamma, suicide on air, Wilson, cuff moments. Copyright, blasphemy, evil weeds in the potting bowl. Balance public sphere to transgressive style bumflap fantasia. Take a bet on nice chaps wanting alternative entertainment. Feed cab, waiting taxi, Denmark Street mixing board. Prize dat, slider switch, intercom, broadband, midriff. Grape juice, ham salad, peace movement, coffee jar, lunch party. Sealed orders on a train to outer music, post-cultural ecstasy. International wheel ingress to hub of nutty solemnant in pars of Q-base infotainment luxury opinion weak knees. Waves of goodwill donation, cheeseburger unexpected rent-free, washed Sara non-Olette in lakeside tweezer crisis comedy. Sound power distribution, Foucault hearthrug reatomize, nomadic Guattari anarcho-liberal radio transmitter mind reach, plasticy moldability ease them through the gridwork, time development C-watch shape rose file intense collectivity. In inkjet, in circuit board, in lady light, in magnetophone, technology under duress of human scale, tea party, clink boat, pleasure trip, object value in service, not exchange deal, antimatter to Galtronics, a blister on the face of commerce. Conway, mass form, people engineering, tidemark, crowd control, and ticketing, enabled urban Mertzbau, sound art, horror track, junk pile, curation of sonic art in length too long to comprehend, base conceptual Techendorf, rampart road in Dow, precipitate black white chemical contortion, grunt body, residual flummox of social calibrant, noduling. Grain paramount, high spring, next season, pop-up, Europe-wide, intracell, spark plug, ho-high knut, bulking, sine waves in abstract, person-rich, geometry. That was Out to Lunch's poem for Knut Alfermann, who recently left the post of studio manager at Resonance. And here is soprano saxophonist Lol Coxall with pleasure-drenching improvers on bricks and dictaphone, recorded at an Ease and Plastic Tuesday on the 22nd of February 2005.
Ha ha! Ha ha! Ha ha ha!
Sword, cream, head, wanted, isolate, carborundum, anti-cab, rueful interpolation, failed split unknown, used against vocable unrest, the same played state. Simmer ululation, a moo cow pin to the nursery, fenugreek a straggle on the runny nose in tray, Dietrich book to Hooser in Lübeck, tossed over endive Greek Street farm reaction, plosive roundabout, forsooth with 00 extras, yah yah, with a freeze of catfish dander rail plaint mate. With steak cream, fuse wire openness, pliers, penned in broke nibs, fast road hatred, hologram upness, connivance of opposites like an op art Sunday. Hot pit molasses, Indian summer retribution, imperio criticism hanging in bacon pizza, rafter cloud bank, no mess, pest control weakening in gummy streaks made a memory. Pullulant in camera, unend flat ass quick wipe, seamstress purple baboon organic wet at the no hole arboreum, resuscitate in trailer park cauliflower by mowed tuft flintlock. Put variety in my decadence, slow down the cutmobile, it grates against the pose tone, penal memory in Seignon flats, hard graft in the afternoon, wasted hours tolerating non speech. That was a poem by Out to Lunch, written over curry after attending a conference on medieval representations of Islam at Birkbeck College last Saturday. Before that, you heard saxophonist Lol Coxhill playing with pleasure-drenching improvers on bricks and dictaphone at an Ease and Plastic Tuesday in February. Guest appearance by Baby Dunya. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for on this edition of Late Lunch with Out to Lunch, but one last thing. Are you free tonight? If you fancy seeing the most pertinent rock band in London, at least since the demise of Jim McDougall's Ape Shit, who put together virulent proletarian resentiment, anti-glamour chic, analytical intelligence and an indefinable violence filtered out from the capitalist system itself, come along to the Royal College of Art tonight to see John Plant and his band Diary. They're playing in the R Cafe, just close to the Art Bar in the Student Union, courtesy of the Drawing Department and the RCA Student Union, and we'll be on stage around 8 o'clock. Doors open at 7. The gig is free. If you don't know where the Royal College of Art is, go to a library and dig out a phone book. There will also be Super 8 footage and musical improvisation by Hugh Metcalf. Probably. This is Ben Watson saying goodbye. Back.